You're listening to the Star Wars Report, Episode 16. So say we all. This episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by ToyHut.com. ToyHut is your source for all kinds of Star Wars action figures and collectibles. Be sure to check them out at ToyHut.com. That's ToyHut with two T's, .com. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Star Wars Report. I'm Riley.
And I'm Bethany, rocking out to our cool song.
Woo! And I'm Mark. How's everybody doing?
Not to forget our trifecta, our co-host, Mark. Mark, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'd be doing pretty good. I don't know about you listeners out there, but who else, when they're hearing our theme song, starts bouncing back and forth? Because I'm watching the video, and I know I'm not the only one. Riley and Bethany are both doing it.
Oh, yeah. Disco Star Wars. I will confess, we were in a car ride yesterday, and I was actually just playing the song just to listen to it. And nice, every time it begins at this portion right here, I feel like I have to... Hello, everybody, and welcome back. So I'm doing like two intros now. So you are listening. You found us. You are listening to the Star Wars Report. For a while there, daily, and now kind of back to weekly and soon to be back to bi-weekly. We never really know what we're going to do. Coverage of Star Wars news and news from the Star Wars fan community. And as we kind of coined on our last episode, our Star Wars journey. I kind of like to call that. We're not really a podcast as much as just a journey together. Don't you like? Am I just being too soft and fuzzy there?
Oh, no. Not at all. I mean, when you think about Star Wars and then you think about the EU, and I'm an EU fan, so I'll just focus on that for a moment. That is one heck of a journey, you know. And George, he likes to take the saga and kind of change the journey. So it's kind of like every time you go, there's a new tree or something has changed in the landscape.
Yes, exactly. I like that way.
It is the journey of the forgotten fans. I don't know what that means, but it sounds good.
That's deep. No. I think that's more applicable than we might actually give that credit for. But this is a very special episode. We're actually doing something a little bit unusual. We're trotting new territory here. This is like the Star Wars Report Battlestar Galactica edition. Dun, 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 dun. I should have come up with an intro for this show, a special. But we are indeed doing
the Joker song.
Battlestar Galactica extravaganza. So if BSG is not exactly your thing, if you're not a fan, you may not enjoy this episode as much. Feel free to tune out and jump back in for regular episodes coming back soon. But this is our continuing extensive and expansive coverage of Dragon Con. This is a series of interviews we did with the cast of the new 2003 to 2008, I believe, series Battlestar Galactica. So we've got all kinds of awesome people that we talked to. Edward James Olmos. I mean, Tomo Pinniket. I learned how to pronounce his name. He told me how. It was embarrassing. Patricia Helfer. And, of course, not to forget the awesome Richard Hatch. So all that's coming up. Stay tuned. Actually, let's go ahead and jump into our first interview with Mr. Admiral Adama himself, Edward James Olmos. Here we go. Here with the Star Wars Report, talking to Admiral Adama. I almost said Captain for a second. Admiral Adama himself, Edward James Olmos. Welcome, sir. Thank you for taking some time with us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you guys for taking your time.
Awesome. I'm Riley. This is my sister, Bethany.
Hi, Bethany. Hello, Riley.
And we just wanted to ask you a few Battlestar Galactica Cylons. And as I've talked to a few of the cast here, but I must ask, we're midway through season two. We've seen a few episodes. Are you a Cylon?
Oh, my God. That's such a big spoiler for everybody.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'll tell you. I am.
Oh, no. Awesome. Well,
yeah, sure. Well, I was wondering, is there anything specific about your character that draws you to Admiral Adama? Anything that you can relate to with him?
Yeah, I can relate to almost everything that happened to him, and the difficulties of trying to understand how to deal with them. Mm-hmm. I'm drawn to him by way of one, that I have the opportunity to play the role. And two, the most important aspect is the humanity of which he exhibits is one that I admire.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you. I was wondering, is there much of a difference between playing a character who has a vital role in a fairly long series and playing a character who's just kind of like a one-time character or even voice acting? Is there a difference between the types of roles that you play?
Yeah, I mean, you know, basically, whether I play the lead or the doorstop, in other words, I don't have any real function. You become a tree like you do in theater when you barely start. Whatever the position is, it's really about the story. And if it's a good story, then I'll help at any point in any position. And that's really the key. So to me, one day's work versus 4 months' work, the only difference is that you're working for 4 months and the other one you're working for 1 day. But the importance of what you do that 1 day and or the 4 months is equal.
Okay. Now, have you ever had the opportunity to meet Lauren Green, the gentleman who played Adama before you?
No, I didn't. I never met Lauren. I would have loved to have met him. I thought he was a great actor. Loved him on Bonanza and everything he's done as an artist. He was great.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, sir, for taking the time. And it's a pleasure to meet Admiral Dama, a.k.a. Edward James Olmos. Thank you so much.
Thank you guys very
much. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Goodbye.
Thank you, sir.
Edward James Olmos. What a gentleman. And he was tired, too, that day. That was Sunday.
Yes.
I was very glad that he took a couple of minutes to talk to us.
I just want to say real fast how envious, again, I am. I mean, you know, we talked on the Star Wars side of things, how envious I was. But I'm also a huge Battlestar Galactica fan. So to get there and to be able to talk to these people, you know, I mean, I've not done it. So the thought of what it'd be like to sit there across from somebody who has portrayed characters that you have come to love and enjoy, you know, so fervently. And I always wonder how I will react. You know, I'm afraid I'll get there and just be like, oh, Adama. Oh, awesome.
I'll tell you what, Mark.
I get to fool myself.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. The first person we interviewed that day was Tom Kane. And I started out being very uncomfortable with it. It's not something that comes supernaturally, especially in that atmosphere. You can hear the crowds. You can hear everybody around you. It is very distracting. And Bethany and I mean, we're not on our absolute A game of sounding super intelligent and stuff. So, but they're very, very nice people, and that's what makes a big difference. So, like with Tom Kane, the first interview, that was pretty bad, or at least I mentioned I nerded all over the floor. It was a big mess. It was, but he was very nice about it, and so was Mr. Edward James Olmos.
Yes, one thing he did say in a panel, Edward James Olmos, that I thought was quite funny was, and to meet all of you people, and some of you who come up shaking and smiling, and you're like, oh, are those the glasses? And he says, of course they're the glasses. They're my glasses. Speaking of his glasses that he wears for Battlestar Galactica. But
yeah.
Apparently he has a lot of fun at conventions too.
I bet. You know, from the bonus features and things like that I watched on Battlestar Galactica's DVDs and stuff, I have almost the entire series. You know, he's one of those that jumped right into the story, kind of almost took ownership. And it seemed like all the rest of the actors kind of followed his lead in that regard. Like, they all kind of, you know, took it upon themselves to make the show better for every character and for the whole story. And, you know, when you watch it, I mean, you guys are, what, up to season 3 right now. You can see that. I mean, by second season, it is really hitting a good stride.
Yeah, yeah. A very unique show. Different from Star Wars. And you can't even really compare them. A lot of people say Star Wars versus Star Trek. You almost never hear anybody say Star Wars versus Battlestar Galactica. Because
I will
so
say
different.
There is a really cool video out there on YouTube with Star Wars versus Star Trek versus Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, there is?
And it's pretty tight. It's got some cool visuals in it.
Nice.
You know, the thing that drew me in immediately, though, and this is me sci-fi across the board, shows like Firefly, but Battlestar Galactica, anytime the starfighters, you know, if they can sell that, I'm hooked. And the first time I watched one of the ships come flying out there and hit the little air thrusters on the nose, and it just spun around and was still flying backwards, shooting forwards, I was like, I'm in. I was 100% behind the show.
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Well, let's go ahead and jump into our next interview with the awesome Tomo Pinnicutt and learn how I learned how to pronounce his name.
Yeah, we're talking with Hilo himself from Battlestar Galactica, and now I'm going to completely take a stab in the dark because I will apologize in advance. How, your name is pronounced?
Tomo Pinnicutt.
Tomo Pinnicutt.
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Whew. You saved me there. I'm Riley.
Yes.
This is my sister Bethany.
I was going to ask if you guys are siblings.
Yes,
the same
we
eyes.
Are indeed siblings.
Yes.
And we do a podcast called The Star Wars Report. That's what we're on now. And we're doing some coverage for Middle Earth Network Radio. So sci-fi and fantasy fans alike are listening to you right now. And I'd just like to thank you for taking a few minutes of your time. If we could jump to Battlestar Galactica. What?
Let's do it.
I'm in the middle of season 2.
Yeah.
Are you a Cylon?
I ain't telling you anything. I could be. Bad question. Next question. I'll tell you this. I like Cylons.
I see.
Yes.
On the set of Battlestar Galactica, what are the main differences between the atmosphere there and the atmosphere on the set of your other show that you're known for, Dollhouse?
Well, they're very different. I find it hard to compare. I get asked this a lot, but I only did Dollhouse for 26 episodes. There was only 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Battlestar, I'm not even sure we did, you know, almost 100 or something. We did 5 years together. So that was a significant experience, and there was a huge cast, too. And, you know, shooting together for that long, I mean, people got married. You know, there was 5 children born between 2 different, you know, families on the set, like 2 of the actors, you know.
Wow.
So much happened in those 5 years, and we were all together for that. And it was a very significant experience,
yeah.
Very beautiful experience in my life, and I'll always be close to those people, so...
Cool. Now, what do you think made Battlestar Galactica such a hit? Because it's not your typical science fiction. It seemed to completely reinvent the genre in a certain sense. The way it was had such a really serious, character-driven tone.
Yeah, it did. It did. Well, I mean, it was just... It's the first science fiction show of its kind like that. It completely invented the archetype of what a sci-fi show is about. It was the most political show on television. It's called many times. I heard it referred to as the West Wing of space, and it was. You would be hard to find any show now or in the last 20 years that had as much political, social, religious commentary as we did, and we weren't afraid of the issues. We could tackle them directly because
we definitely went there.
Yeah, we could tackle them directly because we were in the context of space. So fortunately, there wasn't a ton of controversy about it, even though we were talking about suicide bombers, occupation, insurgents, president guided by God, stem cell research, all these topics we touched on. But they did it in such a brilliant way that they never really took any sides. They forced the viewer to examine both sides see both perspectives.
Ask the questions, yeah.
Yes, that's really great. I was wondering, what specifically draws you to the character of Hilo? What do you think of Hilo?
I love Hilo. I think he's an incredible man. I think when we see him in the show, I mean, he's got the potential to become the man he does become eventually at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And we see him progress and, you know, face all these challenges. But in the beginning, he's still... you know, he's still a young man. He's forced to grow up very quickly, as most of the people on the show are, but especially the young cast, the younger characters who are going through this.
Yeah.
The planet's been destroyed. Civilization's done. There's 50,000 people running for their lives. You can't even imagine what that's like. And suddenly he's married to the enemy, and he's facing so much animosity and racism, and he's forced to take care of his child while still standing up for his strong moral and ethical beliefs. I mean, there's what's not to like about the guy.
Yeah, that's about with Battlestar Galactica. Each character seems to take such different sides or theologies, and they each seem to be right.
Yeah,
but they're often conflicting with each other
that's
in the
so
show.
That's so brilliant about it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys.
Taking a few minutes, but it's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you, sir.
Wow, that's awesome. That's very observant of him to notice that you guys' eyes were so family-like, even.
I know. It's you have a Hilo walk up to you and say, aha, I knew it. It's, wow. Yeah, Hilo. Wow. That was a great interview, and he really put us at ease. And something we kind of discovered later, to be honest, was the fact that we weren't really supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how to say that.
We didn't know it, but we weren't really supposed to be doing interviews in the Walk of Fame or the Autograph Hall. So
don't tell anybody.
Don't tell.
But no, actually, we actually didn't know. But he said, all right, I'll tell you guys, we can't do it in here, but I'll hop outside and we can do it outside in the main area, in the hallway of the Hilton there. And so that's what he did. And we thought, that's kind of odd, because we'd been doing some others and just talked to people at their booth when they weren't busy. And, you know, we were trying to be nice about it and wait till people, you know, didn't have a line of people trying to see them as well. So we would try to catch people when they're not busy. And so I think that's why we were not flying under the radar, but we weren't being intrusive. And so I think that was a key component to why, you know, security guards didn't drag us out of there or something like that. But it's very nice of him to pop us outside to talk to us. So, yeah, Tom O'Pinnicott, a brilliant actor. He really portrays someone with conviction well, without it being, you know, sappy or cheesy or overdone.
Now, if I recall correctly, he was only going to be in the miniseries and was going to be left behind on Caprica. But the story started to build up on itself so much so that he ended up being in 64 episodes. And the later episodes, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything for you guys or anyone else out there, but Hilo's character is by far and away one of my favorites of the entire series. But that was the thing about the series, and like they, you know, he had mentioned in the interview, character-driven. And it is so character-driven that it's really hard to even pick, like, five top favorite characters, because they all work so well and they all have moments throughout the show to really shine. I mean, we're seeing that, you know, from a Star Wars side of things with the Clone Wars, now that the show has progressed enough where they got all these new character models, they're able to take time to go and see those characters. Well, the same thing happened here, and they really fleshed out so many characters that it's very hard to say which top five you have.
Yes, it's, yeah.
Affirmative. Yes, definitely a very cool guy to talk to. The next person was the very lovely and talented and rather creepy and scary at times, Trisha Helfer.
And here we are at Dragon Con talking to the beautiful and talented Trisha Helfer. Trisha, I'm Riley.
Riley, hi.
And this is my sister Bethany.
Hi, Bethany.
Thank you so much for talking with us today, taking some time. Let me turn it over to Bethany for the first question. Here you go.
All right. I was wondering, is there much of a difference between when you play your characters like an ongoing character, like your Cylon, or a character like, I believe you guest starred in Supernatural for an episode? Is there much of a difference between, or how would you approach a long-running character and a character that you just play once?
It's not so much the approach is different in the beginning, because you have to do the work on the character in the beginning, regardless. But when you're doing a character, you know, for a few years, the character is just it's so easy to slip into the character, and you don't have to put as much thought into it. But you've already done the research. You've already done you already know what this person thinks and feels and how they would react to things. So sometimes if it's, a different type of a scene or something really emotional happens to the character, obviously you if you need to do more research, you do. But, you know, after playing number six for a while, you just slip into the character so easily. So you just, at the beginning of doing any character, that's when you have the most amount of work in just developing who the character is.
Now, with the character of number six, you mentioned getting into character. I mean, it seems to me, we haven't finished the series, actually. We're still in the middle of it. But it seems to me that she has a tendency to have such a wide spectrum of emotions. Like, she can be very seemingly calm and compassionate one moment, and then maybe very serene and religious, and then downright evil. And is there an inner consistency there, or do you think she's really just kind of morphs personalities?
No, I don't think she morphs personalities. I think she, our goal with my goal with the Cylons and my character was to show that they were complex beings, and we wanted to show that there could be vulnerability and that there could be, how much was of what they did was because of their programming, and how much of what they did was because of what they'd gone through and their experiences in life. And Ron Moore had said that a lot of the idea of the show was to really make people think that maybe the Cylons aren't necessarily just bad, the bad side, and to look at both sides of the coin and even relate it to our own world of, we think our side is right, but maybe the other side has a point as well. And so, if I had played the character just cold, calculating, one-note character, then it would have been more just robotic, and it would have been easier to hate them and not bring up the issues that we wanted to bring up.
Yeah. Okay. I was wondering, is there anything? Did you really like that about Battlestar Galactica? And were there other things that you liked specifically about filming with Battlestar Galactica, just about the show itself?
I mean, being able to be part of a show that really pushed the envelope and made people think was such a treat to be able to be part of that. I mean, there's so many shows out there that are just, you can forget the story as you know, the next morning kind of thing. And they're great, you know, this is great, and it serves as entertainment as well, of course, and sometimes that's what you need. You just want to shut off. But, to be able to have been part of a show that really makes people think, I'd choose that any day over something else.
Awesome. Thank you. Trisha Helfer, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And I really enjoyed talking to her and interviewing her. She was really nice. As Riley said, beautiful and talented, both of which are definitely true. But
and terrifying.
terrifying maybe to you, but I thought she was nice.
If she looked up at me and said, God has a plan for you, Riley, I would have just screamed and ran. Run!
Yeah, but I liked what she said about... Battlestar Galactica being a show that makes you think. That is something I really enjoy about the show.
Definitely.
Oh yeah, and her character especially. I mean, everything that was going on between her and Gaius Baltar with the in your head stuff. I mean, again, I don't want to spoil anything for you guys. I don't know how far you are, but you know, we see right away it working from in his mind, but later we start seeing it work in both directions, and man, when it really starts get going like that, you're like, what is going on? And all the different models of the Six and the way she played them all. I'll have to say, hands down, Six was probably one of my absolute favorite Cylons of all the Cylons there were. You know, the way she played each one. And in Razor, the one that she had that was actually in a relationship with the captain of the ship. I mean, the way that all played out was interesting in and of itself, too. So, wow. I mean, I loved how they were able to do that and go back and do movies like that. And, you know, all the characters, they owned everybody. You know, they owned their characters so well, these actors, that they were able to just go in and sit down. And you wouldn't even be able to tell that, you know, like Razor was filmed way after most of the rest of the series. It fits so well.
Yeah. Wow.
We'll have to watch Razor.
Yeah, yeah. Our next interview was with the one, the only, the man, Richard Hatch.
We're here with Mr. Richard Hatch. I'm Riley. This is my sister, Bethany.
Yep.
And
hi.
I'll go ahead and hand you over my microphone. Welcome to Dragon God. Of course, I should be saying that. This is my first year.
Well, you're doing a good job. Sounds like you know what you're doing. This is a pretty big event, and it's probably the king of all sci-fi events. So
yeah.
You're lucky to be here.
Well, thank you so much for giving us some of your time, sir. And, of course, you've played Apollo in the original Battlestar Galactica series, and, you know, Tom Zarek in the new series. Now, Bethany and I are in the middle of the new series. We haven't finished it yet.
Right.
So I do have one quick question.
Yes.
Are you a Cylon?
The only thing I will say is that I end up killing everybody, blowing them all out the airlock, and Tom Zarek is the only guy that ever arrives back on Earth.
Spoiler alert!
No, I'm kidding. No. I could never answer that question because then nobody would watch the series.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. I'm hoping. Everybody hopes they're a Cylon. That way, no matter what happens to you, you can download into another body. Now, how cool is that?
Yeah.
Question is, can I download into any body I wish? I don't know.
that would be cool. I was wondering, what was the difference in playing the original Apollo versus playing Tom Zarek? One's kind of a hero, and the other one, so far in the series, seems to be more like an antagonist. What's the difference in playing those two different types of characters?
Well, there's I play 4,000 billion different characters.
True.
Both in acting school and all through your career. So I play thousands of different characters. So I'm just always looking for a character I can relate to.
Okay.
And I can connect to Apollo because part of me really understands that character. I can connect to Tom Zarek because I really understand that character.
Okay.
They're different sides of the same coin. So, you know, for me, I just find a common denominator. I find a common hook, something that I can emotionally connect to in terms of who that character is and what they believe and what they're trying to accomplish. And if I can find that connection, then I can play that character. So I could easily find that for Tom Zarek. I mean, for me, how can you not look at this world and not get pissed off at the way people do business and how they operate in the political arena? So Tom Zarek is a political revolutionary because he challenges the status quo and he makes people accountable. And he's seen a lot of governments go south and lose their way. And he also sees a lot of apathetic people who don't stand up and voice their opinion. So I think he's all about, you know, getting people to do that. So that's all a good thing. I like that character a lot. And I definitely don't see him as a bad guy. I see him as a provocateur in the most positive sense.
Well, that's one thing watching this series is that it kind of challenges a lot of the traditional sci-fi themes and motifs, so to speak, where it seems like each character you can relate to so much that you think they're right, but they're all in conflict with each other.
Well, I think the truth is that life is never what it seems. People are not what they seem. And many times the good guys aren't the good guys and the bad guys aren't the bad guys. And I think people need to wake up and start looking deeper, looking beyond the surface, and realizing that what people say and what people do might be two different things, and that people are flawed, imperfect human beings, and the best of us are capable of doing horrendous things. And the worst of us are capable of doing heroic things on a given occasion. You can be a hero one day, and you can be, you know, Judas the next day. I mean, we're all capable, under the right circumstances, of, you know, becoming any one of those things. So I think you develop a greater insight and understanding and empathy and compassion for the human experience, and maybe a little more forgiveness, which is what the world needs a lot more of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how many Dragon Cons have you been to so far?
I think I've been here over the past 16 years.
Wow.
That's right. I've been coming back ever since I discovered this place back in 95, and I was at the Hilton Hotel, and there was only one hotel, and I think I was the first media guest, and they used to have a show on Saturday night called The Girly Show, and that's what kind of put Dragon Con on the map. Ultimately, they had to take it off because it got so wild and crazy that the cops had to come in and stop, you know, close it down. So anyway, yes, I've been here I'm probably the longest-running Battlestar guest.
Wow.
That's right.
That's amazing. As someone new to conventions, we haven't really been to maybe two or three. How has the convention scene changed over the years?
It's gotten more acceptable. It's we used to have people picketing, you know. Mm-hmm. Church groups would picket sci-fi conventions, you know, and I think they don't realize that a lot of Christians come to sci-fi conventions. You know, I mean, this is a place for everybody. And it's not about devil worship, and it's not about, you know, all that stuff. It's really about exploring the realms of imagination of what is possible. Great sci-fi explores theoretical probabilities and possibilities. It's in fact, great science fiction writers are prophetic in maybe having a view into the future where we're going. And so it's a place for everybody. Whether you're 8 years old or 80, this is a place where you will find thousands of things to do and get to hang out with lots of people who have a common interest in not only sci-fi, fantasy, anime, but also in the world of, you know, space travel, science, medical, medicine, all those areas. And you find people from all walks of life here. Doctors, lawyers, truck drivers, housewives. So there really is something for everybody here.
Yes. And it seems like science fiction writers often inspire people to do more. If you see a new ship in a science fiction series, you want to build that ship. If you see a communicator in Star Trek, you want to build a cell phone, for instance. So that's one thing that I really like about science fiction is that it inspires people. Do you think that that's the case?
Sci-fi has always been way ahead of the curve because it's written by the most smartest people on the face of the planet.
Okay.
So awesome. A lot of the people that write sci-fi are physicists. They're scientists. They're doctors. And they have they're able to extrapolate from what we know now to what we will know and where we will be going over the next 10, 50, 100, 300 years. And I just think that science fiction has always preceded technological breakthroughs. In fact, most of the people that do those breakthroughs come to sci-fi conventions, hang out, write books, and participate on these panels. So, you know, this is if you want to have really interesting conversations, or you just want to hang out and have fun, you want to role play, you want to climb in that little boy or little girl inside and just let out the child inside, which is what we all need to do once in a while, this is the place to do it.
Okay, awesome. Now, I heard that when you were younger, you played the piano. Do you still enjoy music? Do you still play?
Oh, I love music. I don't get a chance to play, but I studied classical piano for several years, and I actually studied ballet and wanted to be a ballet dancer. I wanted to be Baryshnikov. What can I say? Dated only ballet girls for many, many years.
okay.
Still have a thing for ballet girls. I've always been into the arts, music, art, culture, anything that deals with the expression, you know, dealing with expression. So, and I teach seminars on acting, writing, communication, filmmaking, life seminars. I do all kinds of stuff to help people, to inspire people, and to give people some insight into how to take their talents and abilities and leverage them into the marketplace in a more successful and fulfilling way.
Awesome. Well, before we sign off and let you go, I know you're really busy here, but if you were just going to say one thing to our audience, especially people who are interested in acting, or maybe they're interested in piano or something like that, what would your one piece of advice be?
Well, don't listen to that voice inside that tells you, you know, that basically is coming from that fear place, that insecure place, that you know, keeps you from going out there to do the things you want to do. All big things started small. Yeah. You don't have to do something big. Just start small. Start doing the things that you love doing. Start discovering where your talents and abilities lie. And then start finding ways to use those talents and abilities in the marketplace. Every place that you can use it, use it. And it will grow. And you'll meet other people. And ultimately, you will find either a job or connect to somebody who's got a business that can use your skills. Or you'll discover that you've got something unique and different to offer, and you'll start your own business. But follow your gut. Follow your own truth and don't let people get in the way or dissuade you. Most people live lives of quiet desperation because they don't follow their heart and don't follow their gut because they let fear and insecurity stop them.
Absolutely.
You know? And it's just a bunch of small steps. Everybody can make small steps. And that's really the secret to life. Small steps will lead you home.
Awesome. Richard Hatch, thank you very much, sir. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Take care.
Yes, thank you.
So say we all. Wow. That was by far one of my favorite interviews to do, just because at the end there, I was just kind of listening, and I was like, this is amazing. Who would have thought the general public perception of the ideologies, if I can make up a word there, and philosophies, and just the general ideas that can be communicated at a sci-fi convention. I mean, you don't think of that, but I mean, Richard Hatch, the guy's brain is amazing. And so just talking to him, I mean, he's so much more than just an actor who played Apollo and Tom Zarek. He's so much more. And that's a lot of fun to talk to these people, because really we are interested in who they played as a character, but also as a person, what they're interested in, and the person behind such a great character like Tom Zarek. So yeah, Richard Hatch, that was amazing.
Life Lessons by Richard Hatch.
Exactly. I mean, I know. I want
that was
a t-shirt.
Mind blowing. I mean, talk about still waters run deep. I mean, he was dropping all sorts of stuff. I really liked how he was talking about how a villain could be a hero and a hero can be a villain. You know, and again, going back to Star Wars, that's something to me about my favorite characters, the ones that can tread both edges of the line and do it well. And you know, his character, Tom Zarek, 22 episodes he was in there. And, you know, it's funny. It's like when the character was introduced, I didn't think he was going to be but maybe 2-3 episode, you know, in there, and he was done. And they did a lot with him. And I always found the character compelling. One day I was like, I don't know if I like him. And the next day I was like, okay, he's cool. Then I'm like, oh, he's a dirty, rotten Nominor type. You know, so I was bouncing back and forth. But that, again, gets back to the beauty of this show. So if you haven't had a chance to check it out, rush out there and watch Battlestar Galactica, the remake.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? It's kind of interesting, because a lot of people who like Star Wars, I know, sometimes don't like Battlestar because the characters tread
both sides so much that the lines between good and evil the lines between good and evil are blurred so much more than something like Star Wars. And I do find that fascinating in a very different way. If I'm feeling depressed, I'm probably not going to watch a Battlestar Galactica marathon. I'm probably going to watch Luke blow up the Death Star and destroy the bad guys. I think there's very much a place for that. That good versus evil, black hats, white hats type of storytelling, but also the intrigue in Battlestar I find very fascinating as well.
Another thing that's interesting to point out was how he had mentioned that, you know, he's one of the longtime running con guests. And, you know, he talks about protesters. You know, nowadays, that's not really something you hear about that often. But he brings up a good point, though. When these things first did come out, you know, people watched. I mean, you guys were there. You've seen all the costumes and stuff. Could you imagine when that first came out, what people were thinking? What is going on? You know, and I could just imagine the types of protests they were getting and stuff. But he brings up the point, you know, that it's not about, you know, the negativity. It's all about the positivity and you know, what it takes to create these great shows, the cast, the characters, the props, the sets, you know, and gives everybody a chance to come meet them, shake hands, talk to them. I mean, you know, you guys are a perfect example of how awesome this is. I mean, you guys barely know, and yet these guys treated you like you guys were fans and watched every episode. And that's, you know, awesome when you see that kind of fan relationships going on between the actors and the fans.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, as far as... there's still some flack, but not nearly as much as there was. I think he's right when he talks about it being more acceptable. I mean, because it's really just a matter of how society perceives these events. I mean, we've talked about it in our daily episodes back when we were doing the daily coverage, the pros and the cons, and there are cons. Pun not intended at all. Wow, that was terrible. But I mean, go to a football game. You'll find... rowdy people there who make cons, but that doesn't always get as much news coverage as if something unfortunate happens at a sci-fi convention. But that's changing. And so where in sports you have people who aren't wearing shirts with their team's colors painted all over their chest and they're screaming and throwing beer bottles around, I mean...
Or
chairs in some cases. You know, that's more acceptable, or at least more heard of. But I think it's more acceptable now to see, you know, costuming, that sort of thing, especially with organizations like the 501st and their charity work. That really helps the reputation of cosplayers. But before we go, I'd just like to say, play this little clip from a Battlestar Galactica panel. As a matter of fact, the last Battlestar Galactica panel of the convention and the last panel that we attended at Dragon Con. So without further ado.
But I can tell you one thing. I've had a con this year. It's been fantastic. This is my third one, and I hope that they'll invite me back again. So say we all.
So say we all. All right. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Star Wars Report. Woo, that was a lot of fun. I know it was not Star Wars at all, but I figured a lot of fans do cross over into the genre liking Battlestar Galactica, but I had a great time, guys.
As did I. And yes, one of my favorite things about this convention was just how nice everyone was. All of the actors and actresses, the people at the convention. Yeah, everyone. Yeah.
Definitely. Thanks for coming on, Mark. I know you're one of the people who originally got us to be interested in something like Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, and to you listeners out there, you guys want to hear more about us chatting about it as these two get farther in the series, let us know. Nothing's outside of our books.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And thank you so much to Tom O'Pennicott, Trisha Helfer, Edward James Olmos, and especially Richard Hatch for giving us, you know, so much time. I mean, he just sat there and talked to us for 10 straight minutes just at his booth. That's amazing. And it still boggles my mind that somebody is willing to give their time to somebody they don't even know. They don't know what we do or anything like that. So thanks to, you know, all the people, both in Star Wars and here in Battlestar Galactica. We do have more Dragon Con coverage coming, but we're wrapping it up. We have one more episode that I'll do with some panels that we recorded. Ask coming up. Ask the authors. I know you're going to like that one, Mark. and Timothy Zahn's panel as well. But if you want to contact us and give us some feedback, do you hate that we deviated from Star Wars? How dare we? We are no longer fit to breathe on our microphones. I don't know. then you can send us an email, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Send some interaction our way. If I can... Is the interaction... I kind of made a noun out of that. I don't know. And and don't forget our website, StarWarsReport.com, where you can find all the stuff, all the links we talked to. We have some awesome written contributors. Aaron Goins is posting up there. So is Pete Morrison of Lightsaber Rattling. He does some posts for us there. And I believe we might have some... we're still working out the details, but we might even have some weekly Clone Wars reviews, which would be awesome. So yeah, StarWarsReport.com, that's where you can find all the awesomeness. And thanks for tuning in. Thanks for bearing with us in this Battlestar extravaganza. It's a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun, guys. And I think that's going to pretty much do it for this episode. Remember, many Bothans died if you don't give us iTunes reviews. And also to bring you this podcast. So long, everybody, for the Star Wars Report. I'm Riley.
And I will say, remember, so say we all. And I'm Bethany.
And I'm Mark, saying the only good toaster is the one that's toast.
Sing! Many Bothans died when they heard that pun. I love how you can hear us there. You can just a little bit. You can hear. I know. I heard you, Bethany, a little bit in the background, and then I pulled my my high pitched in the distance.
Wow, that was so much fun.
Awesome. All right.